Books, Budapest's weekly English language cultural magazine.
Today we talk with Dr. Moti Benyakar of Argentina about mental health in disaster relief. Hello and welcome. We're joined in the studio today by a very special guest. Hello.
Hello, how are you? I'm Moti Benyakar from Argentina, and now I am in Budapest with you.
You have done an incredible amount of work in fields of psychology, specifically in trauma and stress psychology. In addition, you've worked in the fields of disaster relief. You are a medical doctor as well as a psychiatrist. If I understand rightly, you're also a university professor of ethics in Buenos Aires, is that correct?
Yes, yes.
This is quite a diverse plate of things. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how did you come to have such a diversity mm-hmm. in your work?
Yes. You miss one thing that for me it's very important that I start my career as a school teacher mm-hmm. and dealing with child and what concerning what children feel and they need. And then I started studying psychology and then medicine and psychiatry and psychoanalysis and trying to integrate all those fields together. I am from Argentina and I'm living in Argentina, working in Argentina in this moment. I lived in Israel 30 years and I participate in 5 wars with the soldiers treating people that impacted by the dimensions of those terrible things that are wars. I am pacifist, but I learned that the people not become crazy because due to wars, the war is the crazy thing. And this is what I start thinking about the relation between the outside world and the inner world. And I start working in research in what I call disruptive situations and traumatic experiences. There is a word that it's not in English, that it's only in German and in Hebrew and in Spanish. In German you say Erlebnis, Erleben. In Spanish you say vivencia, in Hebrew havaya, but it's not in English. And it's what is happening inside the inner world of the people when they have to deal with the outside world or with their own feelings by themselves. And this, in this way, that I was trying to make research and work clinically with those issues that are related with the inner world and the outside world. In this way, I arrived to ethics problems and bioethics problems, and now we are working in the field of eco-bioethics. That means the relationship between the inner world, the way of behaving in society, and what the human being are in which way are related with its own surrounding or all the ecological dimension.
Eco-bioethics.
Yes, this is the network that we built in Argentina. We start in the university, and now I am the president of the network of eco-bioethics of Iberoamerica. That means Spain, Portugal, and all Latin American countries.
So both in Central and South America and in Europe?
Yes, all those Spanish speaker in Europe. They proposed me, this is related to the UNESCO, they proposed me to build it only for Latin America, but I think that the right way of building things is trying to build bridges between Europe and Latin America in this way. And there are people that they think that the only way that people can work is trying to work alone and to make things in separately. This is the way that I think that we have to integrate all, not only fields, but also cultures and countries.
Can you give our listeners a concrete example of what would constitute something for which an integrative eco-bioethical approach is the best?
Yes. For example, if you are dealing with people, how to try to develop working places in Latin America for people, you can, in this moment, there is, in this special moment, now we are in February 206, yes? And there is a very special problem that they want to build a factory of paper near the river to give to people more places of work. But people know that in this way they will destroy the water of the river, because the products of the industry, they will poison the water. And the attitude of relating the needs of peoples, the need of each of the peoples and the surrounding, it's one of the way that you can combine eco-bioethics. That means what is happening to each of the individual with the surrounding. It's not only ecological problem, it's also a social problem, it's also a psychological problem, in which way you bring people together and you concern with them. Disasters, that is one of the fields that I work a lot, it's one of the fields that you can see in which way all those different aspects of the human being is combined and how this is are connected and have relation one to the other. Yeah?
I understand that you work with disaster intervention, but also with disaster prevention.
Yes. The main issue in disaster, generally, if you see now in those years, tsunami, Katrina, Iraq, the war between Israel and Palestine, and what is happening, the threat of the Iranian with the nuclear weapons. All the world now is concerned about what we call disaster situations. This is one dimension of the disasters. But the main issue in disaster, it's not only to treat people when the disaster happens, but to prevent that the disaster will not happen. Katrina is one of the examples that there they show that money is not the problem. The problem is the way that you take into account which could be the different threats of the humanity and try to prevent them to appear. Yes, there are countries that are very prepared. They have a low, very high preparations for in disaster, as Holland, for example, with water, dealing with water, and there are countries that they don't take into account that a disaster could happen yet.
Let's stay with this Katrina example for a moment. How could it have been prevented?
Katrina, you have a lot of things that you can prevent. First of all, it's the way that how to deal with water and the surrounding. For example, Holland, they have a very good system to prevent that the river could float, and I think that this is a way of prevention. And I think also the way of prevention is preparing the population how what they have to do in case of. You cannot live in those countries without the population knowing in which way they have to behave. For example, we in Argentina developed a program for each school, for the teachers to teach each children in Argentina in which way they have to behave in different kind of disaster. It's a program that is included in the teacher training. It's part of the teacher training. They receive credits for this program. But this is the work that it's not speaking about this, it's not building committees of prevention, it's trying to bring the people, each of the citizens, to have conscience in which way they have to behave in the case that a disaster can happen.
That's super. Is that also connected with ethics in education?
Of course. The program, it's called Ethics for Teachers, and it's included ethics in disaster situations. This is what we call, because this is an ethic attitude. Ethics, generally, when I enter in this field, I can see that there are people that they think that ethics, it's the way that you can speak about things. But ethics is the way that you are also behaving and also dealing with problems, and this is the main issue. And it's not related to be good or bad. It's related to if you really do what you are expected to do in a special place, in a special moment. And this is why ethics is so related with disaster interventions. And there are concrete programs. I am a concrete man, a concrete worker, and not a man that are speaking very high, that we have to do what we, I am telling you the things that we are doing in a concrete and real programs.
That's great news. Let's take a short break and we'll continue.
Thank you.
Could happen when the day
I understand that you use a very broad definition of what is a disaster. You are focusing on reality and not inherited categories. It's really inspiring to see that in such an integrative approach, disaster can mean a natural disaster, it can mean a man-made disaster, an industrial accident, for example, it can be a military conflict, but it can also be an economic disaster, mm-hmm. It can be a psychological disaster, so there are many different categories.
Mm-hmm. Yes, generally there is a tendency to speak about natural disaster and human-made disasters, yeah? Because we are dealing about the special conditions of each situation as disruptive situations. We try to be more specified of which kind of disaster we are speaking about. In armament disaster, for example, it's different if you are dealing with wars or you are dealing with terrorism, for example. If you are dealing with natural disaster, that there are flooding, that there are volcan explosions, or there are other kinds of natural events, as can be the fever, pigeon fever.
Epidemics.
Yes, epidemics that there are in all the world now, and those are disasters that you can call them natural disaster, but the problem is, it's the human beings are related with this or not. Yes, for example, in Argentina was a city that was the flooding of the river, but the issue it's due the attitude of the human being, the way that they were working in the river, that brings this disaster, or it's only nature do it. This is what we are trying to be very specified in which kind and in which way you have to deal with those kind of disaster. Generally, there is a tendency in disasters that when something happens, it's in all the world. All the politicians, they go to the place, they speak with the people, they tell the people that they will help them. All the media is there for more or less 2 weeks, 3 weeks, till a month, and then people forget this, go out, and they start becoming what generally population call victims of the disaster. I wrote a lot about these concepts. I am very against the concept of victims. I think that victimization, it's the way that the general population put people in a place and don't let them to overcome from what is happening. We are dealing with damaged people, and we have to treat people that they had the damage, and not to see them as victims of the situation, because from this place, psychologically, it's very difficult to move. And this is why we are trying to divide and to learn the specificity of each of the disaster and the way to bring people that they are specialists in each area to think together how to prevent and how to intervene and how to recover people from the disaster situation.
How do you include economics in this framework? I mean, the notion of economic disaster or economic damage.
You see, when Argentina can be one of the examples of what it means, economic disaster, yes? I, as a therapist, had a patient that he came to therapy and he said, "Doctor, I am becoming crazy because I am an economist and I know that this country will be broken. And I cannot sleep, I cannot be with my children because I am feeling that I don't know what to do because the people don't know that this country will be broken." And then I start thinking that generally there are some doctors that they will give medicine to this kind of people because they are in stress and they cannot deal with reality and so on. But he was not a crazy man. He don't need medicines. what was crazy was the situation. This is what I started, I proposed a new concept in psychiatry that I call it the anxiety by disruption. That means what happened to the mind when the surrounding is becoming crazy and it's threatening and cannot give you the opportunity to recover from this situation. And Argentina, with in 2001 was the economical crisis that all your money were closed in the banks and you cannot touch your money. This was a crash of the economic situation in Argentina. People don't trust banks, don't trust anybody. And this, there you have the relationship between the culture, psychology, economy, and government, and the way that they are working together. And one of the examples is that we are working now in the Cathedral of Eco-Bioethics together with the Club of Budapest in this way, building a program that we call Inclusion. That is an institution from Holland that they want to come to Argentina to build a bank project, a bank a relation between banks. And we told them if they want to include themselves in the economy of Argentina, they have to deal with the change of mentality of people, dealing with the poor people, because now you have more than 50% of Argentinian people under the level of poverty. And it's a rich country with a lot of resources. The way it's how you can deal with this. The tendency to try to fight against poverty, it's giving money to people to deal with, to have food and to go to school and so on for the little children. And I learned that in this way the children are learning to ask and that somebody have to give them something. And in this way what we propose to this company is to build a program that each child in Argentina that will be born, he will have or she will have the, a special account for their educational resources in the future. And in this way, we built a program in, with the Ministry of Education to teach the children how to deal with their own money. It may be a very low amount of money. In this way you solve two problems. One, you teach from the beginning that you have, and you have to try to keep and to make it growth and to know in which way to work with this. In the second hand, when the young children they enter to internet and they deal with the media, they could find themselves that the name of himself, a very poor child in one of the provinces of Argentina, will find the name of himself in internet and he becomes a person and not an anonymous man in society. This is one of the programs. There are a lot of them that they are dealing with poverty and the way to deal with economical disaster, a recovery from economical disaster.
In this example which you've just given, it also shows what useful approach it is to integrate European resources and South American resources. So this is an example where working in both spheres is really important.
Yes, yes. Argentinian people and South America in general, they, I can speak especially, I want to speak only for Argentina. There is a very well developed culturally people, but with a history of that the people from Europe or other countries, they came to Argentina to use them. To use and to use their resources and to use their knowledge and so on. What we are trying to do is to build bridges, not to use one to the other, but to try to integrate the resources of one with the resources of the others. This is a different way of thinking. This is why if you come from the ethical field, it's different than if you come from the from companies that the only thing that they want is to use people to make more money and the growth of those companies that come from abroad. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you are really focusing in all of these different fields on healing and integrating, and that's the commonality.
Not only healing. First of all is prevention, then healing. It's the second step. Because if you don't prevent, that means if you don't build from the beginning those networks in a good way, integrating those fields, then they become the problems, yes? And I think that prevention is one, it's not a word, it's not for culture, it's not for people that they want to speak about how healthy you have to be and they don't eat healthy, in a healthy way, for example. But prevention is the way that you have to try to build programs in the way that you can reject all those problems that you know that they will can happen.
What are some other initiatives that you know of or that you are involved in on a more global level?
I will give you another example. In Argentina, Buenos Aires University has a program working with prisoners in jails, and it's people can laugh to think that they are people that are studying ethics in jail, yes, but it seems funny. But all those people that they were in this program from the university, any of them, 10 years of following up, any of them, they came back to jail. Anyone. That means that this works. And it's a way, it's another example of dealing with things that they are related to society. And I think the issue is in which way you work. If you work in the way that you only work with words, for example, in those programs we work with movies, we work with art, we work with expression and so on, and to try to develop the ethical dimensions, developing all those fields. This is why we decide now to make a first international congress related to eco-bioethics and cinema, in which way the cinema express all those dilemmas that there are, dilemmas that they are related with eco-bioethics. Yeah?
When will this conference be?
This will be in June in Argentina, I think from the 5th till the 7th of June, 3 days. I hope that will be a successful meeting, international meeting, dealing with all those problems. Generally, when we build program, we try to use resources from one program to the other. That means the second step of this meeting is to build an encyclopedia of eco-bioethics and cinema that will be also on the internet and people can use to see which are the different messages that in the movies you transmit. Because generally, those people that they are dealing with movies, they are dealing in which way the actors play and how the director was, how music was, and so on. But which is the main message and main ethic dilemma, nobody deal with this. And this is why we try to work in this. And I think that is a very, very important field because all the people generally they are related with cinema.
No other way. All that you can do is watch them.
We're back talking with Dr. Moti Benacar from Argentina. And before the break, we started to explore why it is so important to have a cultural basis and an ethical basis for disaster intervention, but more especially maintenance of healthy situations, so disaster prevention. And I think one great fruit of your research is a greater understanding of the cultural underpinnings which relate to people's expectations and therefore their abilities and their strategies for coping with different situations. You've spoken a little bit about the cultural dimension. What about the spiritual or religious dimension of this problem?
Yes, I think that the example of the tsunami, 1,000 people dead and with a lot of people that they were wounded, we learned there how, in which way the spiritual dimension is important. First of all, generally human beings, they need an explanation of how or why the things are happening. And the first dimension is the spiritual dimension at the people. It's this happened, it's because it may be a punishment of God or maybe something that is related with the spiritual dimension. That means this is one dimension. The other dimension is when you bring people from different culture to help. That's what happened in tsunami, that they came there, but they didn't understand that you can be in contact with the people only if you will be in contact with the spiritual leaders of each group, that they are so different, with so much difference between them. And you can say, well, this is an interesting dimension, but it's not concrete activities. But I want to show you that one of the problems that we had, that was thousands of children, they remained without parents because their parents died, and there were thousands of mothers that they remained with no family. But in the Muslim religion, there is forbidden the adoption. And we cannot propose to those mothers to adopt those children. And we had to deal with this dimension. And also we cannot propose that those children will be adopted by other families in other places in the world. And there you had a problem to transform them, children to be in institutions, because only institution can take care, or to build networks of those mothers being together with those children and start to relate without adoptions, but to make a way of natural adoption of or natural care of those children and those mothers. This is one example of taking into account the spiritual dimension when you are dealing with disasters, yes. When we work in Argentina, in the crash of a mine, there was a myth of why there was why this crash happened there. And we had to work with the widows and those people that they were related, in which way they will elaborate all those myths that they have related to the mine, for example. And so on. That means spiritual dimension, it's present in our daily life. And in disaster, it has a very, very special dimension. And those people that they are working in this, they have to take into account those things. Generally, you have a lot of investment of machines and strategies that not generally work, and so on, to deal with disasters. But the main issue, it's the spiritual dimension, the psychological dimension, the cultural dimension, and the way that those people that are continue living in their places. Yes? And you see this in different situations, and here in Hungary, when I speak with the peoples, the changes of the way of government to the other, when the Communist Party end his period here and became another party, the way of changing, it's not only the economical way of changing, it's also the way that you can be related with your own culture, your places, your past, and so on, and in which way you are proud from your own culture and development. And I can feel it in the earth here.
There are probably great differences in the Western model of, for example, disaster relief, and more Eastern understandings of how people are really part of a shared fabric of reality. Do you find that the Western model overemphasizes the individual or some sort of machine-like notion of wellness? And how is it different in different cultures? For example, the Arab model presumably is much more family-oriented and the individual is less important. And how does that impact the strategies that you need to employ in giving psychological wellness?
Yes. Yes, this teach all of us that an ethical situation, it's not a universal one, that there are ethics dimension related with each of the cultures. For example, if Professor Okasha, that he wrote a book about this, that he is from Egypt and he was the president of the Psychiatric Society, wrote that if a medical doctor have to make a surgery intervention, he has first, in any country, he has first to ask the patient if the patient agreed to make this surgery. In Egypt, the doctor have to ask the family first, if the family agreed to speak with the patient about this special situation. And this is amazing because this is to preserve the cultural dimension of each situation. Professor Carmi, that also we are working with him, he wrote a book about different dimensions of cultures from south, from the western and the oriental cultures, dealing with ethics problems in medicine and dealing with ethics problems in generally in life. And in disaster, we can see it very, very much. I can only tell you one of the problems in Paraguay. There were hundreds of people died because was a mall burned, and instead of opening all the doors, they closed all the door, and all the people were died inside this mall. There were hundreds of people that died, and they have to bring the to make how you may say in English to put where the died people the
coffin.
The coffin, yes. But in this culture, the size of the coffin is related about the way that you are dying, and they make only one great size, and they. When they put it in the earth, the family take them out from the earth to put the right sides of each of the person that they were there. I give you only a little example of cultural and spiritual dimension that we have to deal with them in disaster. Yeah?
This Professor Okasha, whom you mentioned, he, for our listeners, is the director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Center for Training and Research in Mental Health, and his writings on Arab culture are fascinating. One thing which he mentions is that the very notion of mental illness in Arab culture is treated quite differently, that you will never see a homeless, mentally ill person in an Arab country because one strength of Arab culture is the emphasis on the family means that families feel a great responsibility for the elderly, for the sick, and also for the mentally ill. And it's a great shame to a family not to be seen caring for one of their own who is mentally ill. Mm-hmm. And one finding of his is that in Arab cultures which are kind of healthy, enlightened, in an enlightened phase, let's say, that the attitudes of mental health, mental illness, are problems of integration. and these people are seen as lacking some strategies for integrating. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Arab countries in decline, in crisis, that switches to a model of shame and guilt and even possession, so evil. And so we have a lot of incredible lessons we can learn from this integrative approach.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is the way, this is why for us, I am the president of the section of disaster intervention of the World Psychiatric Association. We try to bring together the different notions of different cultures and different attitudes, because from there you not only learn to respect them, you also learned about your own culture and the essence of in which way you are behaving and your own thoughts. Yes, this is why I say that we have I deal with disruption and with trauma, but the only attitude to deal with this is integrating different fields, integrating different cultures, integrating different countries. And this is what attracted me from the Club of Budapest, that is a way of thinking in an integrative way, yes? The symbols of the bridges that you have here, the bridges not only between Buddha and Pest, is a symbol of bridges between the fire and the water, or the warm and the water, and it's a bridge between countries, and also it's a bridge between culture and between the bridge between different kind of governments. And I think that it's, for me, was an inspiring surrounding here to think about what importance you have is to build bridges between cultures and countries and different kinds of attitudes.
And between generations as well.
And between generations,
between the old
of course,
and young.
Yes.
If listeners want to get in touch with you, may I give them your email address?
Of course, they are open and it will be for me a pleasure.
It is motybenyakar@fibertel.com.r. That is MOTYBENYAKAR, motybenyakar@fibertel.com. FIBERTEL.com.AR. And you mentioned that there's an upcoming conference on film and bioethics. There's a website as well where listeners can go to find out about that, and really a whole range of resources for multimedia for disaster and ethics.
Yes.
That's www.redibus.com.r, www.redibus.com.ar.
And this is also useful for the second meeting that will be in November, that will be an international meeting in disaster intervention that we hope that we could develop in Argentina with the leaders of each of the different dimensions, trying to deal with the human attitudes or human dimensions in disaster interventions. Yes, this will be in November 2006.
So for information about those two events, upcoming events, and a whole range of related resources, you can check out www.redibis.com.argentina.ar. These topics that you are dealing with have come onto the world stage in the last couple of years in such a dramatic way, and it is suddenly one of the number one topics for so many people to turning their attention to it. And the approach you are taking is so refreshing to hear about, and so wonderful to know that there is an approach which is not in isolation looking at disaster by disaster, category by category, but it's really taking advantage of a lot of deep wisdom that has been built up in the fields of psychology, in the fields of ethics and human interaction, in the fields of cultural difference and so on, and tying all these things together in concrete ways to have a paradigm shift in how we can apply our resources, how we can really understand these things and how we can start to turn to a more shared consciousness in the world, emerging as a collaboration of different cultures.
Yes. Only one word for the end. May I say it? I have the time.
Please.
This, I want to stress that these activities cannot be one-man show or one-man made. Now I am with you in this interview, but it's a work of a team, a national team and an international team. I think that what we have to build together, there are different networks working together. Now I am here in the interview, those are my ideas, but those activities that you saw, the activities built by a team working together, and I hope that people will be integrated in our team working in each country or in each place in the world trying to build network. That is what I think that is very, very important.
Thank you. We then encourage listeners working in any of these fields, in psychology, psychiatry, psychoanalysis, disaster relief, medicine, education, ethics. This is a real challenge and a real invitation to pool our knowledge and to pool our resources and really understand these things in a much more profound and useful manner. Thank you so much for talking with us, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in Budapest.
Thank you very much for the meeting.
Thank you to our engineer and from all of us here at Liquid Books. Good night.
Out of time. Thank you.